carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top...
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. A little bit into hour three, about 15, and Kevin Athart's going to join us, and I'm looking forward to talking to Kevin because he's now making a habit of winning these Woodbine Oaks. This is a scary talent, it looks like. In fact, let me pull out the... There we go. Let me get the numbers. There we go. Where's the... I can't find the chart now, of course. There's too many. I've got a few too many charts. Also got to mention with Kevin... our friends, the Old Wellings, who won with Hadassah, the won that allowance race right ahead. So it was an Attard exacta, or double, I should say. But Moira, a winner by 10 lengths. And this was, I was playing around with the Chad Brown maiden for Shadwell, that Salibia. Moira was way the horse to beat. In fact, at even money, that she made $4 look like a gift the way she won this. And I didn't see any quotes yet from Kevin, but he joins us now. And for X-Men Racing and Sal Kumin, of course, who's involved, and the SF team, this Ghost Zapper filly, bred by Frank Stronach. And this filly just, I'm making her the 2-1 Queen's Plate favorite right now. Kevin, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Did she exceed expectation from your perspective?
Yeah, obviously I didn't anticipate her winning by such a wide margin. You know, I thought, I've always held her in high regard and think she's a very, very good horse. We were obviously pretty optimistic going into this race that we had a good chance. We had the right horse. I wouldn't change places with anybody in a sense. To see her win like that was obviously, You know, I mean, it was impressive to watch, and then just kind of glad to be a part of it.
Well, you know, I don't want to pigeonhole you, but at this point, you're getting the same kind of reputation Larry Jones enjoys as being particularly good with Phillies and Mares.
I'll take that compliment. I don't have no issue with that. That's you know what I mean. I appreciate that if I'm held in that kind of company. So that's wonderful.
Well, this Philly, and of course, you know, this is a rich opportunity, $500,000 spot, and as I mentioned, I mean, looking ahead to the plate, it's hard to believe that she won't, you know, she won't be either favored, or I'm not sure who else, maybe from North America, you know, south of the border is pointing that way. I know there's a couple of Ontario types that are kicking around, but you know, given the dominance and the success of three-year-old fillies moving from the Oaks to the plate, it sure feels like she's the, you know, the best three-year-old in the country right now.
It's possible. There are some colts there that definitely are, you know, are look good coming into this race. A horse by the name of Ron Durr was pretty impressive in open company here at Woodbine, winning his last start. So, you know, and there's a couple, like you said, that are in the U.S. that have had a couple races that look like have kind of promising futures ahead of them. So if they show up, I think they'll obviously be pretty tough. And, you know, I mean, a lot of these horses are just kind of still lightly raced and still improving a lot. So a lot can change in the next kind of 4 weeks. So I'll kind of focus on our filly and try to get her as best prepared as we can, and hope she's good enough on that day.
Talk about her backstory and her development and how this all came together.
She was, you know, she's owned by a syndicate, as you mentioned, a group of people with the SF partnership and Matacat, right, along with the X-Men group, and she was purchased by Donato Lanny, obviously. One of the greatest guys out there, kind of buying young horses.
Sure.
So yeah, you know what I mean. She came to me probably early summer, I would say, last year, and we started kind of getting her ready, and she was progressing nicely, and I thought you know, she had some potential, and as we got closer, we kind of elected to run her in a stake first time out against kind of restricted Canadian bred, going two turns, and you know, she was pretty impressive raking her maiden that day. So you know, we've always thought a lot of her. She had a good winter, kind of got a little bit of a later start than we were, I mean, probably hoping ideally, but you know, she got to the races. We ran her 7/8 the first time out. She was good enough to win, I think, at that distance, which is probably not something she really wants to do. And, you know, we gave her enough time to kind of recover after that race and kind of prepare for yesterday's Canadian Oaks race. And obviously she was pretty impressive.
Well, she may end up, as things progress, you may look back on that Mazarine last year and say, how did she get beat, you know?
Yeah, you know, that day, too, we had it was a horrible snowstorm throughout the day. The races almost looked like they might not even kind of make it. But the management was able to kind of do a great job kind of keeping the track in good enough shape to run. And I think just... you know, maybe she just didn't handle the track as well that day. Obviously, the horse that beat her, Miss Barbara, is a nice horse as well. So, you know, it's sometimes, you know, you hope that they come up with their best every time, but unfortunately, it doesn't happen all the time.
Well, and that, you know, to look at the family, this I mentioned, this is a Adina product, and and Adina Ontario and Frank Stronach, and that dam, that was a Stronach. I don't know if she was a Divine Aida was bred by Frank or not, but she was a. I'm pretty sure she was a nice horse, the Unbridled Song mare.
Yeah, she comes from a good family. I think there's actually she comes from the same family as Holy Helena, who won the Queen's Plate, right?
Oh yeah.
So obviously by Go Zapper. You know, she's obviously a well-bred filly, kind of bred to go two turns, and she seems to be enjoying what she's doing right now.
Really nice. A little bit about you know, what your expectations were. I mean, in terms of the way this race might unfold, and I mean, when you win by 10, it's you know, it's pretty obvious that you know, instructions or concerns weren't going to be that necessary.
Yeah, well, on paper it looked like there was, you know, plenty of speed. Some horses trying out, you know, a mile and eighth or a two-turn distance for the first time. So, you know, I mean, you assume if that transpires on paper, then you're going to basically sit a good trip. You know, give too many instructions to the jocks. When the gate opens, a lot can happen, a lot can change. So you have to have confidence in your rider. Obviously, Rafael Hernandez is a great rider. Very capable, and he did his job and did a good job in doing so.
Well, the plate lies ahead, and you would certainly think, I mean, given the way you handled her last year as a 2 year old, debuting her, you know, going a mile and a 16th and in a stake, the mile and a quarter, thoughts on that front?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the distance. I think the further she goes, the better she gets, actually. So a mile and a quarter, I think, is going to be well within her wheelhouse. Obviously, she'll get a bit of a weight allowance, saves 5 pounds running against the boys. So I think that helps going that route of a ground. So, you know, looking forward to hopefully getting there. And as long as she comes out of this race in good order and she seems to have bounced back good, I'm sure, you know what I mean, we'll probably head towards that direction.
You know, you look at that dam, and actually you look at this whole family, and the way she, you know, the way she's scoring on the Tapita, there's really no surface that you know, that you wouldn't think she would take to. I mean, there's pedigree for the turf later on, and you know, I don't want to put Fort Erie and the breeders, you know, ahead of things, but it sure feels like she's uniquely equipped to try what might lie ahead here over the next 2 months.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of exciting possibilities. You know, I definitely think turf is going to be in her future at some point. You know, and like you said, possibly the dirt. So we'll just take it one race at a time right now, and you know, let her kind of check the boxes as we go along.
Outstanding. Well, Moira, a open length romping winner in the $500,000 Woodbine Oaks, setting her up as your plate favorite, I would think, or right among the choices. And Kevin, let's touch on, you know, some of the other, you know, the other activities, because of course, you know, the Dance Smartly, Money for Roe. I'm sure you watched with interest as your former charge ran for Tracy Farmer, and right, the Amalfi Coast was out there for Cassie and Farmer and the Hendry earlier on the card. And you also, I should mention, Super Flashy ran okay to be fourth in the Oaks.
Yeah, she did, actually. She, you know, she had a little bit of trouble at just kind of heading into the quarter pole. May have been third best, and she kind of had a cleaner trip. So I was very pleased with her performance as well. As you said, I did watch, obviously, Amalfi Coast. She holds a special place in my heart. So, you know, I'd like to see her do well and for her new connections. And she ran a great race, tough beat, but it was nice to see her kind of put a good performance out there. And I was very pleased with my other filly, Money for Rose race. You know, she was heading into the race in good order. She had worked really well heading into it. I was very, you know, excited to see her run, and I thought we were sitting on a big race. She did not disgrace herself.
Well, and that Wakanaka, who won as the 6-5 choice, she, yeah, she's nice. So no disgrace at all losing to her, and that Fevrover, Cassie's another Tracy Farmer for Mark. So you had a very good day, and I did mention as you were joining us on the line, always nice for Bill and Al Ilwelling to score, and so I got a feeling that they probably bet the Attard double between the eighth and the ninth.
I hope so. Yeah, no, their horse actually ran a really corker of a race yesterday too. He's a nice horse. He's really matured from 3 to 4. And, you know, he looked like he was sitting on a big performance, and it was just nice to see him put it together. You know, obviously, he's last year's winner of the Prince of Wales, and he seems to be kind of making that transition from 3 to 4, which is nice to see, and hopefully he continues to develop and head in the right direction where maybe we can see him in some bigger races later on.
What transpired after the Breeders' try that had him laid up for, you know, a pretty good 7-8 months?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, when you do the Triple Crown series, you're asking a lot of a young horse, and it takes its toll on them. And Al and Bill are wonderful people to work for. The horse comes first, and it got to the point where the horse was just tired and needed some time off, and we weren't going anywhere for the winter to race, so it just made sense to kind of give him an elongated break and prepare for this season. And I think the horse has really thrived off of that because of his, you know, the long rest that he's had, and he seems to have kind of just really kind of matured and grown into himself now, and you know, he's running really well.
Well, it'd be nice. We'll see what he ends up, you know, where he ends up, probably back into state company. And I'm just pulling up. I wanted to see what Lady Hadassah, what else she's got going. She did have a daredevil baby that is a younger brother, and he's gelded. Then there's a Looking at Lucky, a 2-year-old, Looking Asa, that coming your way.
Yeah, he's here, and we had a little, you know, just kind of some little minor two-year-old issues that popped up with him that required a little time off, and he's kind of back into training. I actually like this little guy. I think he's something to kind of keep an eye out in the future. He seems like he's talented, and hopefully we'll get him to the races at some point this year, and he can show some ability.
It's pretty funny. Lady Hadassah, who, of course, the Old Wellings had a lot of success with, and it's funny. She dropped a filly by Verrazano, who was a modest winner, and now, subsequently, she's had 6 straight boys.
Yeah, there's a lot of boys in the pipeline since. I do think there may be a filly coming up, actually, maybe next year from her. But, yeah, she's been on a bit of a tear with the boy, so she's been an honest mare for them, a decent producer, and hopefully they just kind of continue to kind of come out this way and be good racehorses.
That's very interesting. They've got a Motown. There's a Motown yearling and an Air Force Blue weanling. And
yeah.
next time we get a chance to exchange with Bill and Al, we'll see who they bred her back to, but she's been terrific to produce. Listen, to produce Hadassah, a Canadian classic winner, that makes you a major producer.
Definitely.
Talk a little bit, Kev, about the summer and probably you should touch on what else is coming up the pipeline and 2-year-olds, how the shed row looks.
Yeah, we've got a lot of younger horses, actually. You know, we've had a couple good 2-year-old winners a couple weeks back that we're looking to bring back into stake action the week the weekend of the 20th. One was a 2-year-old colt that went first asking by the name of Philip My Dear. He won going 6 furlongs on the turf. So obviously we're looking to kind of stretch him out a little bit, maybe possibly make a you know, set a date in the Summer Stakes if that's possible. And on the same weekend, we actually won with the Philly division with a Philly that Al and Bill own. Her name's Wickenheiser, well-bred Philly, half to a Breeders' Stakes winner here in Canada. So she was pretty impressive first time out. And we're looking to kind of run her on the same weekend of the 20th and maybe head to the Natalma with her. So we're excited about those two prospects. They look good. And, you know, we've got some first-time starters probably coming up within the next couple of weeks that seem to be showing some talent and ability. So hopefully they continue to progress, and we'll see them at the races soon.
Outstanding. And I'm going to ask you about the one you own with Sabli Mehta, the Candy Ride gelding, Special Forces.
Yeah, you know, he ran better last time. I was a little disappointed with his first start of the rate of the year. You know, he's getting a little older. I'm not sure if maybe he's lost a step. But he's healthy, he's doing well. So we're looking, kind of shopping to find a spot for him. You know, maybe somewhere where we can kind of gain his confidence back and kind of get him back on a little bit of a roll.
Where are you with that nice-looking two-year-old, one of the early Moore Spirit winners, Velocitor?
Yeah, so we ran him back a little quickly in the stake, I guess, last week, the weekend before. He ran third, and afterwards we kind of just sent him up to the farm and kind of kicked him out for a couple of weeks to just let him eat some grass and relax a little bit, and then we'll bring him back in and kind of start him up and look to maybe something in early fall with him and get him going again. So nice colt. Seems like he's got a good future ahead of him. And, I mean, he's run three times, and all three starts have been pretty solid.
Kevin Attard, everybody. And you can follow Kevin on Twitter. You're not big on the Twitter, but Kevin_Attard and Moira, the Woodbine Oaks romper yesterday. Going to be a handful to deal with when we get to plate day in a few weeks in August. Kevin, always great to connect. Continued success, and we'll look forward to the plate.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Kevin Attard, folks, and just a outstanding job. And it's just kind of funny. The Phillies, they're kind of stacking up here out of the Attard barn. It's kind of funny. He keeps winning with them, and he also has been able to maintain them, you know, turn them from good fillies into good mares. Johnny D is going to join us. We'll get Johnny in here for the last segment of the morning because we had so much fun on Saturday, and Johnny had some explaining to do, I think, to Gail. But when Gail found out that Tina was coming. It was, you know, Johnny had one foot out the door, I think, already on his way down to. I was surprised, actually. Johnny said this was only his second time at Monmouth. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, although, you know, he's been in Philadelphia, you know, for as long as I've known him. So back to Philly. So I guess, you know, the time he spent out west, when you spend as many years as he did in California, I guess that takes out your opportunity to go to Monmouth. But it's just such a fabulous place. I mean, obviously we all focus on, you know, Saratoga and Del Mar get the attention, and that sort of shortchanges Ellis and Monmouth to some degree, but if you've never been, it's just, it's got such a tremendous vibe to it. It's casual, but you know, the people that dress up, that's fine too. And you know, the original parterre boxes, and you know, the first luxury boxes of any kind at a sporting venue, and you know, the history. In fact, a couple of people. Who was I? Well, I went up the elevator with Safi Joseph and his dad, and I guess it was Safi's first time as well, and he was really impressed. He said, "How old is this place?" I said, "Well, you know, it's a different building than the original, etc. It's not, you know, it's not like Saratoga, but it's got such a wonderful atmosphere." And I haven't seen all the details yet. I mean, in terms of we should probably do a recap, find out about how the fixed odds portion of the day went. We'll get some of the other. I know they had a good. I think they had it right. They had a good day business wise. I have not looked into that portion yet of the. There was enough to recap. Obviously, just staying on top of the action, and including yesterday because we were in the car. It from Monmouth from where we were in Asbury Park, which was just we had just such a nice 4 days there at the Asbury. It was about 5 hours to get here to Virginia, and just this incredibly gorgeous Keswick Hall, and we'll talk more about it at some point when we get a chance. But here's Johnny, and it sounds like he's on his way to play golf.
You're like a mind reader.
Well, it's a quiet, it's a fairly quiet race day, and you had a busy race weekend. So, what else would you be doing?
Well, it was a little alteration of plans. I was down in Cape May, New Jersey, and Mr. Schwartz is in Avalon, Will Schwartz, our good friend, and we were supposed to play down there today, but our game was canceled, a couple of guys got sick, so we said, what are we going to do? Well, let's go home and play at home, so I'm headed over to Will's place to play.
All right, that works. Why not? Well, we had such a nice time, and I mentioned a couple. I don't know how much of the show you've been able to hear this morning, but it's such
a lot of it. A lot of it. I drove home from Cape May, so I heard a lot of it.
Perfect. All right. Well, the day I thought Johnny, and as I was mentioning, as Casey was grabbing you. I was surprised at how limited your Monmouth experiences have been, it's such a fabulous time there. I've gotten down to the point where I pretty much only am there for Haskell week, but you know it was the first racetrack that I got to go to on a regular basis, living in Brielle. And I that was the closest I had ever really lived to you know a racetrack to be. You know, 20 minutes away and you know, go catch an early double or you know, go catch the last three or four races. And, of course, Monmouth's tradition, thanks to Amory Haskell, he had the tradition of a late start, and much like Del Mar, so that they could all play golf. All the honchos could go play golf in the morning and then be ready for a 2 o'clock start at the racetrack.
I think that's very considerate planning, actually.
Right?
And it's funny, Monmouth, like, I hadn't been there very many times in my life, but I've actually worked there. I actually worked the holiday weekend. I did some television stuff for them, probably late 80s, maybe 90s. Carolyn Conley was working there, and she said, well, are you free to do some work? I said, yeah. She said, well, we need somebody. So I worked up there on a holiday weekend many, many moons ago. So, but I've never really spent a lot of time at Monmouth, so I'm very unfamiliar with the track itself. And there are so many nooks and crannies in that racetrack and levels and dining areas and of course they have that beautiful picnic area all you know, what down to the, it seems like it's down to the eighth pole. It's probably maybe not that far down, but it seems like that far down from the top of the stretch. Really amazing, amazing place, and so much history. And I got kind of a backwards tour of the plant because I was with an intern who didn't know her way around either, and we were trying to get up to visit Frank Miramonte up in the announcer's booth, and we just kept going all these different directions. Finally, we made it up there, and of course, when you go to Frank's booth, of course, there are many celebrities visiting. Let's see, Dwayne Lucas was up there, Trevor Denman stopped by, Rodney Dangerfield was there for a little while. You know, Frank gives you the entire picture when you're up there. Actually, up there live and in person was Chris Griffin, the announcer from Parks, who I'd never met before, the new announcer of Parks. So it was great to, you know, and then you walk around and you see so many people, and you kind of forget, you know, the old cliche about the racetrack family. It's true. I mean, it is a cliche, but a lot of cliches are true. And this one happens to be true. And you see people that maybe you knew from 30, 40 years ago, and you see them and say hello, and you hug. Even in this COVID-ridden world, we still, you know, you hug because you're so happy to see them, and maybe you've had some great times with them in the past, and it all just comes bursting forward because you haven't seen them in so long. I, you know, this age of simulcasting, ADW wagering, maybe we don't get to the racetrack as much as we would like to or as much as we used to, but certainly the relationships are there and the memories are there, and they come flooding out when you see someone who we've known a long time. So, yeah, it was great. And, of course, having Will Philly run so well, that was a charge, too. When you're second to a 3-5 Chad Brown, okay. You know, you kind of, we beat everyone else. So, you know, leader of the band finishing second in the Molly Pitcher was great fun. And Will was so happy and all his, you know, all his buddies who were there that weren't with us immediately at the table upstairs, they were all happy. And it's just that really, listening to you talk to Al Gold earlier, you know, that's really it. I mean, whether you win or you run second, you run well, whatever, it's, you know, these guys are successful in business. They've made plenty of money. This is what is so great about racing, is you get that feeling you can't get anywhere else. When your horse wins or your filly runs second, you're on top of the world because, you know, the Will Filly's a homebred, too, on top of it. And when that happens, it just, man, it just makes you feel so special. And it carries over, you know, for the next few weeks, you still have that feeling of being special. And that's really what we're selling in racing for owners. You know, you're not going to get this feeling anywhere else. You know, when your horse wins and you go in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, at Parks, Thistledown, I don't care where it is, you are special, and it's the greatest feeling around, and you can't get it anywhere. I mean, not that I know of. I'm sure. You know, if your pickleball team wins a championship, you probably get a similar feeling. But this is what we're selling. You know, it's you're so special because all eyes are on you, and your horse has accomplished something. And really, that goes back to the foundation of the game. My horse is better than your horse, and let's prove it, and also while we're at it, why don't we bet on this too?
let's make it that much more interesting.
Exactly. So, great day, a lot of fun, and that racetrack is just look. When you go to a racetrack where they have a paddock bar, they have a bar in the saddling paddock. You know you've gone somewhere special. That was the first for me. I hadn't seen that anywhere else before. I'm sure it's been done. I just haven't seen it.
It's funny. I don't recall it either. And you know, at Saratoga, famously, you know, people come wandering. You know, not trying to get away with anything, but they come wandering with glassware in their hand, or you know, or beers or whatever. And the one of the toughest jobs there is at Saratoga is being the paddock gate man. Yeah. And thoughts to.
Oh.
To Leroy, who's gone and who did it so well for so long, but you know, explaining to people, can you please put that down and you know, etc.
I thought I was going to be in trouble because I drove to Will's house to meet him, and I had shorts on, and I knew we were going to be inside somewhere at some dining establishment. I didn't know which one or where or whatever, and he and Drew both had long pants on and. He said to me, I don't know about your shorts. And I said, well, it's Mama's. That they, you know, it's branded as the, what is it called? The place by the shore or something. I mean, that's like.
The shore's greatest stretch.
The shore's greatest stretch. If you can't wear shorts at the shore, where can you wear shorts? And he told me, he said, well, they threw me out of the paddock at Parks because I had shorts on. I said, wait a minute, whoa. What do you mean to take three out of the paddock at Parks to get shorts on? Hold on a second. I've seen some people in the paddock at Parks. They should have had shorts on. Anyway, I know there are restrictions, and I told him, I said, well, look, if there are restrictions, he said, do you want to borrow a pair of my pants? I said, no, I don't want to borrow. Let's just go. And if I get chased, if I'm not allowed in, that's fine. I've been to racetracks before. I'll be fine. Believe me. But whatever room we were in, we were allowed that short. So there you go.
Yeah, the turf club. Well, when we talked to Tony, I didn't get a chance to talk to Tony last week. But one of the most famous casual features of Monmouth for a long time was. The jock swimming pool. There was a pool that the jocks used to romp in.
Yeah, I remember that.
What'd you make of the give us a recap, your thoughts on the race, Johnny? And I talked about it with Mig, and obviously Al had his view of it as the winner, but I honestly all three, you know, the whole trifecta, and it's funny I caught the stretch run a minute ago on Twitter. I thought the three of them acquitted themselves very well, and Mig made the point that, you know, this feels, as we get into the Jim Dandy and Travers and Pennsylvania Derby, that by the time we get to fall, we're going to realize this is a good group of three-year-olds, and I kind of distilled the results from Saturday down to experience in a lot of ways, I thought.
Yeah, experience, because experience came in handy because there was a time when Flo the jock had to wait a little bit. That horse had, you could say, well, he had the advantage of riding the rail, but he had to go around the horse on the rail, and he kind of had to wait a little bit and search for, it was similar to Rosario's trip. On Sunday? Am I confusing the races? Is it Sunday or Saturday? The New York race, where the jock had to wait a little bit. That was the Mountain. No, it was the Malathon race. It was with Clairière.
Yeah, with Clairière. Yeah.
He had to wait, and they dropped down to the inside. Well, I think also in the Cyberknife, Flo Jock had to wait a little bit before before he finally found a clear room and got through on the rail. And he exploded. He exploded through there. He quickened through there like a, almost like a turf horse. So I thought it was a really good race. And I think, as has been said earlier, this is a horse who's really coming into his own right now. Always had that, you know, possibility, coming into his own right now. I do agree with the rest of you on the Epicenter point. And his workout, the last workout I saw that he had, wow, he looks awfully good. And he's just had the misfortune of running into a couple of, not your day kind of situations. But he's been a good horse a long time. And always with the three-year-olds, the question is, are you still moving forward? And, you know, we pose the question at the beginning of the three-year-old year for the two-year-old stars. Are you moving forward? And then for the three-year-olds who have to be, you have to put the pedal to the metal to get to the Derby, and then you've got the Preakness and the Belmont, or you don't, but you've got that pedal to the metal to try and get to the Derby, and then the question is, are you still developing? And when we get to late August, or late August when we get the Travers, the question is, okay, who has made the step? And that's what makes the Travers so interesting, because then the next step from there is obviously the Breeders' Cup, and you've got the Pennsylvania Derby for someone else to make a later bid. But are you still developing? And that's the question we have for Epicenter and for some of the ones we haven't seen since the Triple Crown races. But I think Cyberknife has, yes, has answered that yes. I'm still getting there. So
yeah. Yeah. Is that much closer to being a finished product, yeah.
And then the table, you know, it's his third race. You know, he's eligible to improve, no doubt about that. I think in Chad's case, the one turn mile, the 7/8, that's where that horse is going to make his living. He can go further. He's just probably not going to be as good, as brilliant as he's going to be shorter, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. And there, you know, the beauty is that, there's still plenty of, starts to come, and he's pointing to long, you know, to be back as a four-year-old. So there's plenty of things that Chad can continue to do with him. Johnny, it had so much fun on Saturday. Thanks again to Will. We'll wish Will good luck today at Presque Isle with the opportunity they've got there as well, and we'll catch up.
Yeah, with you, you know. We're not going to wish him good luck in the golf course, though. I want to take his money.
No, take his money. Take his money.
Yeah.
XB Johnny D, everybody. And this went by a little too fast today, but we'll have plenty more tomorrow. We'll talk, in fact, to Aaron Wellman from Eclipse tomorrow, Andy Serling as well. Some more, plenty more horsemen to congratulate from the weekend, and want to thank Al Gold for a wonderful, wonderful visit this morning. Bruce Brown, Kevin Attard, and Mig, and Johnny, good luck today if you're playing, everybody. And thanks to Rob McNamara, who couldn't be here today, and I'm sick about it. He's under the weather, and he invited us here to Keswick Hall. I'll tell you more about this. Just an unbelievable, the golf course, the club, the hotel, just amazing, amazing. And I can't thank Deb Easter and Rob enough for inviting Tina and I here today. We'll come to you from Colonial tomorrow. Racing resumes there, and look forward. Replay tomorrow morning here on Sirius XM, archive pod, etc. Coming soon. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who you betting on? How about an app created